The date is July 15th, 1998, and we're watching There's Something About Mary. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Franks to my beans.
Man, I'm so glad you. I was going to chastise you if you said anything different. Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
Had to be. I'm like, who do I pair up? Franks and beans. So this week we're looking back at July 1998 when the movies in theaters were Madeline, Small Soldiers, Dr. Doolittle, very family-friendly time in the box office, Lethal Weapon 4, not so much, and of course, our movie for today, There's Something About Mary, which earned $369.88 million on a $23 million budget.
Wow. Isn't July's like blockbuster season?
Yep.
That seems like a weak ass lineup.
A little bit, yeah. Because I pick out some of the choice ones when I look, and if there had been anything huge that month, it wasn't that month.
It's kind of funny because I know people talk about
it was Lethal Weapon.
Yeah. I know people talk about 1999 as being one of the best years in film, but now I'm wondering if it's because 1998 was just so shitty that, you know, anything would have been good.
Well, I mean, this movie itself, this is a success story that it did so well because Kingpin had done so poorly, and so the studio was giving them one last movie. And luckily they made this, and the Farrelly brothers really took off from there because me, myself, and Irene and stuff like that were post this.
Yeah. Well, of course, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want to be something hit with spoilers like an electrocuted dog, then hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, I have several here. I have six of them. The first one, everyone's talking about Mary.
Yeah. That's the take, but
yeah. It ends in an ellipses. Like, you were waiting for more. Yeah, this tagline didn't know how to end either.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the second one, there's just something about her.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I feel like you're just rehashing the title.
I mean, that sounds like that would be one long, good tagline. Everyone's talking about Mary. There's just something about her. It sounds like it should be one tagline.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, number three, here's where we get into Farrelly Brothers territory. Warning, the guys who did Dumb and Dumber and Kingpin bring you a love story.
Sure.
Number four, no animals were harmed in the making of this movie. Everybody else was on their own.
I like that one.
Yeah. Just wait. My favorite's coming up. But first, number five, the most fun you can have on video. I'm assuming that was a video-only tagline.
Yeah.
Okay, finally, rounding it out, my personal favorite. Love is in the hair. I love a pun. I love a pun.
Yeah, it works on multiple levels.
But that may not be the best description of this movie, so let's go to Colin and get a 60-second synopsis.
Okay, here we go. When Ted was 16 years old, he fell for a girl way out of his league named Mary. And after he valiantly steps in to protect her brother, Warren, from a bully, Mary kinda has a thing for Ted, too, and asks him to be her prom date. Unfortunately for Ted, the night of the prom is a disaster after he inadvertently triggers Warren, who proceeds to lay the smackdown on him and then accidentally zips his dick and needs medical attention. This incident causes Ted to miss the prom, and shortly after, Mary's family leaves town. 13 years later, Ted is still pining for Mary and what could have been. With the help of his friend Dom, Ted hires an investigator named Pat Healy to track Mary down. Pat finds Mary living in Miami, still hot and as kind as ever, and promptly falls in love with her. When he returns, Pat lies to Ted about Mary in order to dissuade him from contacting her himself. He then moves to Miami and sets about seducing Mary himself. Pat manages to start dating Mary for a while until her disabled confidant, Tucker, begins investigating him and discovers some unsavory truths that he then reveals to Mary. But it turns out that Tucker is also a liar, whose real name is Norm. Norm is a pizza boy who is also infatuated with Mary and has concocted a ruse in order to bed her. Around this time, Ted has learned the truth about Pat's lies and goes to Miami to meet Mary. Ted and Mary finally hit it off, and things are going well until Mary receives a letter from her college stalker, Woogie, that reveals Ted hired Pat and all that. Woogie turns out to be Ted's pal Dom from like 2 seconds ago, who shows up at Mary's apartment to steal her shoes, where she's rescued by Pat and Norm. With all her suitors in the room, Pat makes a final plea for Mary to choose one of them, but then Ted shows up with Mary's ex-boyfriend, NFL star Brett Favre, who she might have married if not for Norm's lies. I need to use more commas in this. After returning her true love, Ted accepts that it's not to be for him and Mary and bravely leaves the entire situation. But Mary has other ideas as she realizes Ted is the man for her after all. Smooch, smooch, smooch.
Colin, it's Brett Favre.
Favre? Favre?
Oh boy, there's something about Mary. This is one of those movies. I mean, this was the Ben Stiller movie. This was the one that launched him. And the fact that you have not seen this movie, I mean, spoiler alert for what Colin's about to tell us in a second here. It shocked me to no end that you had not seen this movie, because this is the one that started Ben Stiller. I mean, the studio was hesitant to cast him. They wanted Jim Carrey. Apparently, Jon Stewart auditioned. And so they said, okay, fine. We want Owen Wilson, who was less known than Ben Stiller at the time. And the studio kind of met in the middle and said, fine, you can have Ben Stiller. So, you know, like, to think that this is the one that became the Ben Stiller movie that you should know. And I mean, it's from that time that I love. It's from that American Pie time and all those movies that came out around that time where you're gonna see some gross shit. And you know, I think about
some
movies,
potty humor, as they say.
Yeah, I think about movies where hands are glued to dicks and where shit is being wiped on towels in the bathroom, and, you know, like all these different movies from that era. And there's something about Mary. Always loved it. And, you know, great solid movie. Love a good Farrelly Brothers movie. And this is one of the good ones. Colin, so, yeah, you have no history with There's Something About Mary. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was a little bit before, not my time, but like before I was into those types of movies.
The R-rated shock and comedy.
Or like would have had like people to introduce me to them.
Yeah.
But I the thing I always remember about this movie, though, is obviously like the quote-unquote hair gel.
Yeah.
Scene. Like I just remember seeing advertisements and trailers for that everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was pretty much all I knew about this movie prior to watching it.
Okay. I'm sure it's been spoofed in something as well that you may have stumbled across at some point.
Well, I think the hair gel scene is definitely spoofed in Family Guy at some point.
It's got to be. Got to be. Yeah. Well, okay. Here we go. Let's jump into There's Something About Mary. Directed by Bobby and Peter Farrelly. Produced by Frank Bedore, Michael Steinberg, Bradley Thomas, and Charles B. Wessler, and written by Ed Dechter, John J. Strauss, and Bobby and Peter Farrelly. And so, I mean, we open this movie on, I gotta say, right off the bat, this is such a cool crane scene, right? Just the fact that they crane down from the sky, and then you see the band, or well, I guess the guitar player and drummer, sitting in the tree, singing you the opening ballad of There's Something About Mary. And then the crane shot continues down to like the front of the school. And it's just, it's a beautiful opening shot. And you get so lost in watching the band playing in the tree and seeing if the drummer matches up to the beat that like you forget that they're in the middle of a one shot. And I want to shout that out because way to go, Farrelly Brothers. There's a couple of very nice crane shots in this movie.
Mm-hmm. My wife, like in seeing the singers in the tree, and maybe you might know better than I can't remember, but she saw that and was like, is this an Adam Sandler movie? And I don't remember an Adam Sandler movie. I guess it's kind of reminiscent of like Happy Gilmore when he has the like dream montage.
Yeah.
But because she mentioned that, I then kept noticing that this movie has a very like Sandler-esque feel.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just like a 90s comedy type aesthetic.
It could be. I mean, I know you've seen other Farrelly Brothers movies. Right, like you've seen Dumb and Dumber and Leave Me, Myself, and Irene.
Yeah.
Have you seen Kingpin?
No, I haven't.
No, okay. I'm trying to think of other Farrelly Brothers movies.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar. Like, even, I mean, when I think about it now, I could place, like, oh, yeah, the same people who made Me, Myself, and Irene made this movie, but I wouldn't have necessarily thought of it as a Farrelly. I guess I'm just not overly familiar with the Farrelly Brothers.
Yeah. See, they made movie 43, Hall Pass, The Ringer,
ooh,
Stuck on
Ringer.
You, Shallow Hal.
Oh, yeah, Shallow Hal.
Osmosis Joe, Say It Isn't So. Yeah, so a lot of those kind of movies.
Okay.
But I'm seeing Green Book? Is this the same green, a working class Italian American bouncer becomes the driver for an African American classical piano? Mahershala Ali. Okay, yeah, yeah. That Green Book. He's the director of that. That's wild. That's like a. Todd Phillips Joker turn is what that's like.
Yeah,
impressive. Okay,
the one thing right off the bat I appreciated about There's Something About Mary is having the like I don't know how old Ben Stiller was in this movie, but I'm gonna guess like 30.
Well, he's 7 years older than Cameron Diaz, that part I do know.
Okay, but yeah. I love the turn of having like these 30, like late 20s, like to mid 30s year old actors just playing their high school roles,
their high school selves. Yeah, like the even the doctor, like Willie Garson there. And yeah, that's a nice touch for sure.
It makes it seem like a play because you don't really see that a lot now. I feel like that was a common thing in 90s comedies. Yeah. But now they would just cast like a younger lookalike actor.
Yeah, we'll throw on some extra zits, or we'll put on in some braces, or you know, something like that.
Fuck. Okay.
Bump my desk, and then avalanche started. Okay, everything's still going. Cool.
Also, I feel like in The Mask, when we watched The Mask, I had remarked that I was never a big like Cameron Diaz
person,
fan,
yeah.
But my God, is she beautiful in this movie?
Yeah. Yeah, she's pretty dynamite. That's for sure. Yeah. And they like highlighting the fact that she doesn't wear a brassiere very often.
I know, I was going to say she was ahead of her time on the free the nipple movement.
That's right.
Braless.
And I don't mind. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, she's definitely a cutie. Yeah. And she's the one that can pull off teenage self, I think. She's the only one that it's kind of like, okay, sure, they're in high school.
Yeah, kind of. Like, kind of. Like,
out of all of them.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. We'll go with that.
Yeah. it's interesting that even though I loved this movie so much back in the day, that it took me a minute to like find my bearings in this movie, because it's been a long time since I've seen this movie. And so as soon as they introduce Warren, I'm like, oh shit, right. I should have remembered The Ringer, because I thought of The Ringer when Warren showed up. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Farrellys definitely handled Warren respectfully in this movie. I think they're always respectful of that kind of thing, because I know Warren is based off of someone that they actually know.
Yeah. I don't know what to say here. Like, I agree. I don't think, like, Warren... I read a lot of reviews that were, like, more current takes, or people, like, mentioned that they were, like, making fun of mentally disabled people or that type of thing. But, like, I don't know. I never really felt like Warren was the butt of the joke.
No, they do drop, you know, the hard retard in at one point with, but that's all part of that character. That's to show how incredibly unprepared this man is for this ruse that he's about to pull off by saying that he loves working with the retards. Right. And it's like, that's the only part where I feel like it's being used hurtfully, but that's because that character is an asshole.
Yeah. And she also like calls it out right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like it's not like she goes along with it.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's like, oh yeah, my brother is like, yeah. Like she's like, well, that's insensitive or whatever she says.
Yeah.
So yeah, I didn't really find, my wife was kind of like, she saw it, she was like a little, I didn't think it was a problem. And then I also think like the other, like when Tucker comes and there's like the scene where he's trying to like pick up his keys or whatever, she was like, oh, like that seems so insensitive, like that. But then I kind of feel like when it's revealed who he is, then part of me thinks like, oh, well, maybe that was just like an act.
That was him trying to play for sympathy. He was trying to,
yeah,
get her to feel more sorry for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, it took me a minute to find my bearings. But then as soon as I found my bearings, it was interesting because I was watching this movie so much more critically than I ever would have before.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at how the seeds were planted, and I was kind of giggling to myself thinking about, oh, right, it's a mystery movie. I'm looking forward to seeing whether Colin is shocked by any of the reveals, because I'm watching these seeds being planted with some of the things people are saying and realizing that, oh, wait, they're all playing Mary at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, how did you like the whodunit of it all?
I was actually, like, surprised.
Yeah.
Like, I was not, like, I thought, I kind of, at a certain point, was like, oh, like, Tucker seems like he's also into her. But I was not expecting it to go, like, as deep as it did. And I was honestly, like, very...
My name's Norm, man.
Man. Yeah. And then with the like, Woogie... reveal, I didn't see that coming at all. Yeah. Really.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's great about this movie, is if you don't know that you're walking into Knives Out, you're shocked when you get to the scene at the end, which is, you know, the typical end of a mystery scene where all the characters are together in one room for the big reveal. That's one of the things that's great about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The a critic criticized the guy that plays Norm / Tucker, Lee Evans. He said that Lee Evans's British accent was one of the worst that he had ever seen on film. And Lee Evans is actually British. Like, he was intentionally playing up the accent a little bit more. He was exaggerating it. But it's like, he is actually British, and that's hilarious to me. But he does a pretty good Norm, man. I'm Norm. I'm just a pizza guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought his British accent was decent. It reminded me very much of Cary Elwes, like his natural accent.
Yeah,
but I love that part when he comes. I think it's the one when he comes in to tell Mary that Pat is a murderer or whatever, and her, like, is that old lady Mary's roommate?
It's her neighbor.
Her neighbor.
Yeah, but she's lonely, like, because her husband died or something like that.
He's like, I just hoped you'd leave us alone so I could give Mary a good rogering. And yeah. I was like, oh, yeah.
A proper rogering. A proper rogering. Absolutely. Why not? Yeah. He's always throwing in little stuff like that. Yeah. But back to teenage Mary. Yeah, Ted comes to the rescue of Warren, and so now Mary is kind of into Ted, and she invites him to the prom. I love the detail that when they're walking home, that after all the piggyback rides have come, that Ted is just dripping in sweat from having carried Warren most of the way home. Have you seen my baseball?
I love Mary's stepdad.
Yeah.
That was also unexpected. Even that kind of was like an unexpected for him to be her stepdad.
Yeah, yeah, and the look on his face of I'm like double checking the address. Yeah. Like, I was here yesterday, right? He was very funny. Like, when the incident happens in the bathroom, I love the part where he sticks his head out and he's just like, honey, get in here. You gotta see this. Just the way, and like all the, you know, I'm fucking with you and all that stuff. Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, with the, like, I like in the incident scene how, well, first, I don't understand the layout of their house. Like, okay. I don't know.
Well, yes.
It seems like there's some weird courtyard. Like, how big is that house that Ted
which
can...
Which wing is Mary in?
Yeah, how does he see when her?
Yeah, like, there's got to be, like, I don't know, an addition built on the back of it or something.
Well, and then maybe? Also, like, the police officer, like, just shows up at the window, which seemed very almost like... Adam West
yeah.
Batman, like, I don't know.
No, that's pretty great. I do love that before the incident happens, the zipper incident, I do love the, you know, the fact that he also does lose the baseball, where he's like, no, I had a baseball for him, I swear. Mm-hmm. Like, I love those kind of little details. I mean, they really fuck Ben Stiller up in this movie. They do a lot to poor Ted. I mean, he's like Jason Biggs. I mean, Jason Biggs came along the next year and just, like, out Ben Stillered Ben Stiller. And
yeah,
then
totally.
Ben Stiller's like, hold my beer, and he does a movie like Dodgeball. You know, like, it's... that's a different kind of Ben Stiller.
I would have never thought that, but now that you mention that, like, it is true, like, Jason Biggs is... like
young Ben Stiller.
Yeah,
the,
like,
next Ben Stiller 2.0. Yeah. The next generation.
I also kind of feel like Ted Mosby is a little bit of a ripoff of this Ted.
Yeah.
Like, well, not a, but I would not be shocked to find out that, like, Craig Thomas, Carter Bate, like, that they were influenced by this movie, because even that character's, like, kind of like this, like,
lost, looking for love.
Like, just, like, endlessly, like, hopeless romantic, looking for, like, his one true love. Even the fact that, like, I'm positive that there's a point in How I Met Your Mother where Ted, like, finds some girl, like, the... When he marries that dentist woman or whatever, he ends up, like, reuniting her with her, like, ex-husband or whatnot.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Got to have that kind of character. He's the lovable, you know, no, I just want you to be happy. And he means it. That's the difference. He means it. Yeah. Have you ever pinched yourself?
No. I actually don't even understand. But you know what the thing is I'm like I guess this is a broader conversation. I'm an unbuttoner and zip down. I'm not a unzip pull through.
Okay. Yeah, see, I'm an unzip pull through kind of guy.
Okay.
I've pinched once, but never have I laid tracks. However, apparently the whole scrotum in the zipper incident is based on a real event.
Oh man.
Yeah, it happened to one of like the Farrelly sister. It happened to
This ouch.
it happened at a party that she was at, or
Oh,
something.
not to
No.
her.
No, but she was at this party, and the boy went off to the bathroom and ended up zipping up. And luckily, the dad there was a doctor and went and checked on him and did not tell her until many years later to spare the feelings of the child of what had happened. But yeah, I guess you can run it completely up the flagpole. I had no idea that it was possible, but hey. Ouch. God,
Damn, that would hurt.
I've only done the catch and been like, "Oh no. No, I'm not all the way in." Right? Like that's as far as I've gotten, but yikes. We've got a bleeder. Yeah. I guess the part where they when they're wheeling him out, the part where the stretcher collapses was actually an accident. That was not scripted. It was a blooper. And so they like cut immediately and they're like, "Ben, are you okay?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm okay." And they're like, "Okay, so we love it. So we're gonna keep it. So go like it still collapsed." So that's what they did. Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole what like, I don't know. That has to be one of the best openings to a movie ever.
Yeah. Like there's a very interwoven sequence of events going on there, from the baseball to the needing the bathroom to the doves to the strangely shaped house. But and then it, you know, like the fact that this bathroom fills up with people is also unto itself amazing.
Yeah.
Like when they have the firefighter there and the you've already laid the track. We're just gonna back it up.
Oh, there's also the part like I love when the dad is talking about like how did he get the balls above the
Yeah.
shaft or
What
whatever.
exactly am I looking at here? Yeah. Which one's the Franks? Which one's the Beans? Yeah. Okay. I love though when it cuts back to present day and he's talking to an empty chair. That is such a great shot there, where he's talking to the empty chair and then the psychiatrist ends up sneaking back in from lunch. Like, how obsessed is Ted with Mary? This has got to be something that he has talked about nonstop for 13 years.
Yeah,
The doctor knows how long he'll go on about it. Like,
it is kind of concerning because Ted's like the guy you're meant to be pulling for, but I actually think like the better the ending the feel the ending that would make me personally feel good is if by the is was if by the end of the movie he actually managed to get over her. Like I actually think it's a I actually kind of think the ending is a little bit of a letdown in that Ted is still like he's just gonna go back home, be back in the chair because he lied to her when he says he was fine. Like
Yeah,
he's just
yeah.
gonna be back in this chair the next day if she doesn't come out like
True.
still
Yeah.
wondering about like what could have been and like how he lost his chance, and it'll probably be even worse because now he'll be all like, "Oh, I lost my chance," and blah blah, and all that, and like,
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah. Like even if we had taken out the bit at the very end where he's exaggerated crying as he's walking back to his car. Yes, it's funny, but it might have been okay. Yeah, if he had even that would have shown a little bit more of he is actually okay with his decision.
yeah, like they needed what the movie needed was it needed the ending of 500 Days of Summer where it's like he meets it. He's all hung up on this girl, but at the end he finally moves on, and then he meets like another girl and falls in love.
So someone that would be if like Magda was not like old and leathery looking. You know, like if he had fallen in love, you know, or, you know, like the best friend that was in front of him all along, if Chris Elliott's character hadn't been a guy. But I mean, that's not the movie these guys were making. They wanted to make the dark comedy where everyone is a little unstable.
I was shocked that the girl Ted first asks out didn't have a comeback. Like, she didn't show up again.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it would have been...
That just overcomplicates it. You're already throwing in all these guys that are all pining for Mary that it's like, ugh, why do we need to complicate Ted's love life? He just has to be one of the suitors.
I guess.
He's just trying to get the rose, man. Will Ted. Yeah, we get to meet Chris Elliott and Matt Dillon, you know, so yeah, his friend Dom introduces him to Matt Dillon. Matt Dillon to, maybe I was trying to say Damon too, I don't know.
Matt Dillon McDermott Mulroney.
Yeah, yeah. he is, Pat Healy is such a fun character in this movie. I mean, for Matt Dillon, this is one of the first times he's ever attempted comedy. He's never been a comedy guy. And I think he is absolutely hilarious as this scumbag private detective. Like, when he gets the teeth, oh my God, does he play with those teeth?
He is wearing fake teeth, right? I was like, did I miss something?
Yeah, because she says something about she likes a guy with nice pearly whites. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he goes and like gets his teeth capped or something.
Okay.
Because yeah, he's got big ass like the mask teeth.
Yeah, I didn't really notice it at first, and then all of a sudden I was watching the movie and I was like, why? Like, yeah, exactly. Like, why does he look like Jim Carrey all of a sudden?
Yeah. This character of that Pat, I guess. They first wanted Bill Murray, but then decided, no, he's too old. And so then they thought they had considered Cuba Gooding Jr., Hank Azaria, and Vince Vaughn. That is five very different Pat Healy's in this movie.
Say it again. Say like, those.
Bill Murray, Cuba Gooding Jr., Hank Azaria, Vince Vaughn, and then Matt Dillon. Like, that's... You're looking for something, and you don't know what it is. But I can't imagine anyone but Matt Dillon. Maybe Hank Azaria.
Oh, I was going to say Vince Vaughn to me is like, he's played this same character before. Like he's. Played...
I guess so. This is a Wedding Crasher.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's very Wedding Crashers-esque.
Yeah.
But
Bill Paxton. Bill Paxton should have been on that list.
Yeah. But there's, I think there is something about the fact that Matt Dillon isn't a comedy, like known comedy guy that
yeah.
I think makes him the right guy for this role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just yeah, like when he's spying on her, just the you know like in the car with the ring negative, boyfriend negative, tight little package. Affirmative. That feels like the Jim Carrey role right there is what that feels like. Like if they wanted Jim Carrey for this movie, like it should have been the Pat Healy character, not the Ted character.
Like I'm shocked that you didn't say Jim Carrey was the guy that they wanted for this movie because unless but I could also see maybe Matt Dillon not coming from a comedy cloth. Maybe he was like, oh, like, who's the guy? Jim Carrey. Like, maybe I'll try to be like that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he loves Ace Ventura. It's his favorite movie, right? let's see if I can slip an alrighty then in there. Yeah. So I gotta say, it's a day in the life of Mary. That's a pretty good day. I mean, she's just a ray of sunshine. Like, you know, it's her day off, so let's go hit a few golf balls and, you know, give out some stuff, you know, to her charity. And, you know, I'll give the old man that lives on the dock a sandwich, you know, like, just
yeah, she lives
living her best life.
She lives the type of life that I imagine, like, influencers I see on Instagram live.
Yeah. But no, she's a goddamn doctor. Like, she's a crazy podiatrist surgery, I don't know, whatever it is.
Yeah,
she's a foot doctor, isn't she? Foot surgeon?
It's going to bother me. She's an orthopedic surgeon.
Surgeon. There we go. Yeah. But yeah, her day off is pretty good. But we get we do get the girl talk scene with all the little hints towards Brett in the future. One of them does call him the Pac-Man. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't put any of that together. I was not expecting
Brett Favre to show up. Yeah. Yeah. I guess he was the third person they asked. Yeah, they asked Drew Bledsoe and Steve Young as well.
Okay.
And I think it was Steve Young. One of them is like Mormon.
Okay.
And like was against the subject matter of the script, and he's like, no, thank you. I think that was Steve Young.
Isn't Brett Favre isn't he caught up in some sort of like fraud, defrauding old people scandal right now?
Is he? Oh, I don't know. Who's the penis picture one? One of the famous football players down there is known for sending a dick pic an unsolicited dick pic to someone. I don't know. I thought maybe that was Brett Favre. So Healy follows her around for a bit, listens to her in the restaurant, laughs at her vibrator joke. Because she's got a vibrator. She doesn't need Brett. And then comes back to Ted with the good news that he found Mary. And then we find out that, oh yeah, now Healy is definitely going to try to sling some dick around Miami if he can. He wants to get on some... he wants to get on that Mary. And just... You know, the fact that Matt Dillon is not from comedy... I mean, you would think that, like, he was improvising all of this, but I don't think he is. But my God, like, just all the stuff about her being in a wheelchair and all the kids she has, four fathers. Like, this man has a story put together, three fathers for four kids, and, yeah, she's put on, she's a deuce and a half. Deuce. Yeah,
so offensive.
Oh, deuce and a half, eh? Okay. Yeah.
Oh, Pat Healy. I feel like he's the unsung hero of this movie. Like, he's surprisingly, like, I was shocked at how little Ted is kind of the thrust of the movie. I would say it's much more Pat.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I feel like there's a big chunk of this movie that has to do with like him kind of like seducing Mary and going out on dates and like kind of trying to avoid Tucker and fessing up to the architect thing and then Ted kind of comes back in the picture. He does have a lot of story.
Yeah. He's got a lot of plot thrown at him. And I mean, that's the thing, is there is a very ensemble feeling to this movie, which is one of the things that's fun about it, is that everyone's kind of got their own storyline and fairly equal screen time. You know, when you really think about it, like, the main guys that are part of it all are the main guys. I mean, like you said, yeah, Pat Healy has a lot of story, but even Tucker gets a fair amount of screen time, too.
Mm-hmm.
Norm, man, because they've got their own little adventure. Yeah.
I don't know why,
see
but
that
I...
side quest movie.
Yeah, they should
Tucker
had a...
and Healy.
They should have had a. They should have had a spinoff.
Yeah,
I love the scene when it's like, I think it's part of the montage of Pat and Mary, but when he like goes to the beach day with the disabled guys, and they're like playing football, and he's like pushing them all away. Yeah. and then he has to cheat at checkers. I was like, they do such a good job of just like showing. I actually think like Pat is the most. He's the character you know the most about. Like, you know exactly who this guy is and what type of person he is.
You know who this guy is. Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, when he's hitting on her at the driving range, like, it looks like he's about to do such a good job, right? Like, oh, okay, no, I'm learning. And then, I mean, he starts talking about Mongo being locked in a cage and how he just can't get enough of those goofy bastards and all this sort of stuff. And it's like, oh, geez. Like, you need to put a little bit more work in. Mm-hmm. You need to learn the terms to use. God. So Ted, though, does end up finding out from his doctor friend, who I believe in the credits was actually called Dr. Zit, that because he's always got zits. But yeah, he finds out that, no, wait, Mary's a doctor and she's hot. She's not this welfare case with all these kids inflicted with all these diseases and in a wheelchair and everything like that. No, she's a fox.
Mm-hmm.
She's a fox. So he's going to go down there and find her. I mean, we end up getting a road trip movie out of this.
Yeah. Who's that? Is it Harlan Williams? Is that
Harlan Williams, the Hitchhiker? Yeah.
I mean, this was the one part of the movie where I was like, maybe I could see where people might, like, I don't know. I like how this movie lays the groundwork. Like, I think it's earlier in a conversation with Dom where maybe it's the psychiatrist where he's talking about how truck stops are... like where gay men go to hang out.
And... homosexual hangouts, yeah.
And so, yeah, what a weird thing to happen. Like when he just has to go for take a leak and just ends up on his knees with somebody's dick in his face.
Yeah, of course. Why not?
As
most of those guys at the all the time, every time. Yeah, apparently most of those guys were like crew members from the from the movie.
Yeah.
That's how they filled out their extras. But yeah, no, that's a fun scene. Apparently, Cameron Diaz is in that bag.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe not when they're actually in the car with the bag in his lap there, but when he gets out of the car, Cameron Diaz is in the bag. Yeah, she said that to Jay Leno on The Tonight Show once.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, the Farrelly brothers said that Harlan Williams was difficult to direct because he kept just doing his own thing.
He's like more, I feel like he's more of like an improv guy.
Yeah. But interesting that you should mention that scene because, Colin, earlier today I was thinking we should do a little I used to like this One Piece theater. Alrighty, Colin, I have sent you the little conversation between the hitchhiker and Ted in the car. Who would you like to be? Would you like to be Ted or would you like to be the hitchhiker?
The 8-minute abs.
All right, so you want to be the hitchhiker.
All right.
Okay, let's do this. Driving along.
You heard of this thing, the 8-minute abs?
Yeah, sure. 8-minute abs. Yeah, the exercise video.
Yeah, this is going to blow that right out of the water. Listen to this. 7-minute abs.
Right. Yes. Okay, all right. I see where you're going.
Think about it. You walk into a video store, you see 8-minute abs sitting there, there's 7-minute abs right beside it. Which one are you going to pick, man?
I would go for the 7.
Bingo, man, bingo. 7-minute abs, and we guarantee just as good a workout as the 8-minute folk.
You guarantee it? How do you do that?
If you're not happy with the first 7 minutes, we're going to send you the extra minute free. You see? That's it. That's our motto. That's where we're coming from. That's from A to B.
That's right. That's good. That's good. Unless, of course, somebody comes up with 6-minute abs, then you're in trouble, huh?
Not 6. I said 7. Nobody's coming up with 6. Who works out in 6 minutes? You don't even get your heart going. Not even a mouse on a wheel.
Good point.
7's the key number here. Think about it. 7 elevens, 7 dwarves, 7, man. That's the number. 7. Chipmunks twirling on a branch, eating lots of sunflowers on my uncle's ranch. You know that old children's tale from the sea? It's like you're dreaming about gorgonzola cheese when it's clearly brie time, baby. Step into my office.
Why?
Because you're fucking fired.
Yes! I used to like this one, Peace Theater. I partly chose that because I wanted to know what it was. The 7 chipmunks twirling on a branch, eating lots of sunflowers on my uncle's ranch. I just didn't feel like transcribing that into the notes, so I wanted to have a physical copy of that. That is quite the little speech that he says. If he indeed did go off script like the Farrelly brothers said, to come up with the... you're eating gorgonzola when it's clearly brie time, baby. Like, what the fuck is going on? That Harlan Williams. And then he does that Puppy Dog Pals. Has your daughter done Puppy Dog Pals yet?
No.
No, it's a Disney Channel show. It's a cute little show, but Harlan Williams is the creator of it.
Okay.
Yeah. And he does one of the voices. I don't know if I remember that old children's tale.
Is it it's an older show?
I don't know. No, the Puppy Dog Tales. No, I was talking about the 7 little chipmunks twirling on a branch, that one.
Oh.
Yeah. You know that old ditty, like, or whatever it is he says. Yeah. So. Boy, the bit where Mary surprises Pat with the architecture exhibit, apparently the one that he says is Art Deco is actually Art Deco. Fun fact.
I mean, it was like 50-50 on.
Yeah. But my God, like, if you're going to pretend to be one thing, you should read a book. He comes so unprepared.
A couple of things that confused me about Pat were he seemed, for somebody who's like, you know, he's got all the equipment to be a good investigator, and clearly he's a con man, but you think if he's been doing this for years, he would be, you know, have his ducks in a row a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Then, maybe he's not used to the long con.
Yeah.
But you gotta do a little research, man.
And the second thing is when Tucker comes and reveals, like, he rattles off this long story about how, you know, Pat was suspected of murdering these people, but the bodies are so mutilated that they couldn't identify them or something like that, or find any, like, forensic evidence.
Yeah.
And it cuts to Pat in the car, like nodding, like, oh, yeah, like he got away with something. But then you find out later that he didn't murder anybody, so I didn't really understand what that was about.
I think game appreciates game. I think that's what that is. That's how I always take his reaction to that. You know, because he either reacts with, oh, fuck, or he reacts with, you know, okay, this is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, because it is the next scene where he ends up running him off the road or running across somebody's yard. Fuck, why didn't that person come out? They're waiting for a pizza. They should have been like, wait, what's the commotion on my front lawn? Maybe I should go check this out. Yeah, but I mean,
that's true. Could I just get my pizza, man?
I mean, the pizza gets flipped upside down. Even fuck, he fucks that guy's night up. He's leaving trenches in his yard, and he's fucking with his pizza. I just want a dinner. It's cold because it's been sitting in his truck while he's been or his trunk while. He's been telling Mary all these lies.
Yeah, I guess. Hey, like, it's not like he went, this pizza's just been sitting there. It's not like we get to see him go to the pizza shop and...
He stopped off at Mary's on the way. It was like he's an Uber driver that was like, hold on, I just need to run in for a pack of smokes. Do you mind? I mean, you know, like... I've never taken a fucking Uber. Do they do that? I've never ever Ubered.
I've only ever Ubered once.
Yeah.
And I think if you do need to stop, they will stop for you.
No, I meant them. Oh. Them running in for a pack of smoke.
I mean, that might affect your ratings.
Yeah. I'll buy you a coffee if you let me stop. Yeah. So anyway. So Ted gets arrested for accidentally soliciting sex. But meanwhile, Mary and Healy are having a good day. And then we go back to Ted in interrogation. The big misunderstanding about him picking up the hitchhiker, that's a fun interrogation scene. And, you know, shout out, Richard Tyson, who is one of the cops in that scene. He's Detective Crevoy. He was Crisp in Kindergarten Cop. He was the bad guy with the cheesy ponytail. That's one of the detectives.
Huh. I really thought the one cop was Martin Cove.
No, and that's
for a second, but
that's the one that's the one I'm talking about. That's the bad guy from Kindergarten Cop. He looked so much different without that terrible ponytail.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I guess this is also like another 10 years. What year was Kindergarten Cop? Earlier in the '90s, at least 91. I don't remember. Fuck.
I was going to say, I thought like, yeah, maybe like 89, 90.
Yeah. But, you know, in a comedy, I always love a good misunderstanding scene. A good sitcom that does a good misunderstanding scene. And this is one of the good ones. When you have the double meaning of, you know, oh, the hitchhiker? Yeah, I'm sorry. I know I'm not supposed to.
Have you ever picked up a hitchhiker?
I never have, no.
Yeah, me neither. No.
Yeah.
Just seems too risky, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. On our Woodstock trip, we joked that we should offer to pick up a hitchhiker because we were crammed into a 2-door Nissan Sentra with 5 of us. So we were already packed in there, and we had joked about how we would stop for a hitchhiker.
Nice. I mean, I feel like it would have made for probably a nice anecdote and an already fun story.
Yeah, that's right. The newspapers would have loved it. Hitchhiker slaughters 5. like that at axe wielding hitchhiker guy Cody on Netflix.
Yeah.
I think that's his name.
Apparently, that guy's from St. Paul.
Really?
They don't really go into that in the story, but yeah, he's from Alberta.
He's a good Canadian boy.
Bam, bam, bam! I really thought that the band that shows up periodically,
mm-hmm.
like, I thought eventually one of them was going to fall for Mary. And yeah. be involved in the actual narrative somehow. Yeah. I mean, I guess one of them takes a bullet at the end, but
that's right from the side character, the old man from the pier who was just banging Magda to get at Mary.
in any of your research, did you discover what type of prosthetic they used for Magda's breasts?
No, I did not. I did not. I would say some form of beef jerky, like, you know, like some like tanning method, like how you would dehydrate beef jerky. Yeah.
I was kind of wondering if that actress is like how close she is to that, like sun-baked.
No, when you see her picture on IMDb, it's like, oh no, she's very heavily made up in this movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I've seen, especially like older women like that, yeah. where somehow they think that the sun is going to restore their youth when it's really just like tanning them. Like, yeah, no, their hide.
She's got a bit of a I don't know, like a Meryl Streep quality to her when she, Emma Thompson quality. Maybe, you know, current Emma Thompson. She's got, you know, she looks like an elegant old lady. She doesn't look like the, Florida trash that she is in this movie.
I think the other unsung hero in this movie is that dog, or the
The Puffy?
Whatever, the dummy, the fake dog that they use
periodically. They had several. They had several fake dogs, apparently. Yeah. And like in the cast, that's always great. The full body cast for the dog when he accidentally leaves it on the roof. Puffy is apparently in real life. Puffy is a girl. Oh. Yeah, it's kind of like how Lassie was always actually a boy. You know, things like that. Yeah, it's Puffy was a girl. Yeah.
The scene of like, I think maybe it happens more than once, but where they show like Puffy and Magda basically like French kissing.
Yeah.
So gross.
Yeah.
So nasty.
It's not the greatest. But I mean, you know, it's Magda does the gross shit because she's got the gross boobs. So I don't know. I like Magda and Puffy on speed. That's always a good time.
Yeah.
What kind of dog is he again?
We also get to see a very young Sarah Silverman.
Yeah, she was looking pretty young.
I like her.
Yeah, the voice of what's her face in Wreck-It Ralph. Mm-hmm. You know that that Magda, she's just always smoking them cool cigarettes, you know?
No, please tell me what kind of cigarettes are they?
Cool cigarettes, I told you.
Oh, but cool cigarettes?
Yeah.
That's a brand?
Yeah, it's a brand. K-O-O-L. Yeah, not, cool. I'm it's not... so cool, it's not spelt right. That's how cool it is. But I think that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner. No shit, right? So always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, There's Something About Mary is brought to you by Chrysler, Dodge, Chevrolet, and Toyota vehicles, U-Haul, Cool Cigarettes, Budweiser Beer, Dunkin' Donuts, Pepsi Cola, Oreos, Mrs. Dash, Schwinn Bikes, Spalding Sports Equipment, MTV, Checkers Restaurants, Powers Systems, the Boston Bruins, and the Cardoza Hotel. The hotel that he's staying in, the Cardoza, is a real hotel. It's owned by Gloria Estevan from the Miami Sound Machine, you know. Come on, everybody, let's do the conga. Yeah, yeah. And plus the fictional Dockey's Dogs, which was the Farrelly's dad's nickname, was Dockey. So that's why they named it Dockey's Dogs, because they, at the time, thought this was going to be their last movie. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Did they film, well, I feel like the room where, like, the hair gel incident happens is not, is that seemed like a staged room. Or was it in the actual hotel?
I doubt it was in the actual hotel, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of which.
Didn't like the room?
Well, it looked so not real compared to, like, everything else that you see, like in relation to, say, Mary's apartment.
Well, Mary's apartment was real.
Yeah.
But it doesn't exist anymore.
Okay.
Because there was a condominium that was going up, and they were actually going to incorporate that building into this new condominium development, but a crane fell on it, killing two people, and so they never even made the condos, and yeah, the apartment from There's Something About Mary was destroyed.
Damn.
Yeah. Crazy, huh? Jeez. That's fucked up.
Yeah, that's messed up.
but anyway, I think you were about to talk about masturbation. So let's talk about jerking off, flogging the dolphin, polishing the bishop. Oh, he's got them all in this one. This is where they all came from, I think. Choking the chicken.
Unfortunately, even though I enjoyed the rest of the movie, I thought this scene was, maybe it's because it's all I knew about it, was was a little bit of like a letdown when it finally came around. I thought there was
going to live up to the hype.
Yeah, I thought there was going to be more to it. I don't know what I thought was going to be more to it, but I just thought there was going to be a little bit more going on with that. I also didn't really like
appreciate the sound.
Yeah, like the Foley work of the, like, it was just like, yeah, it was a bit much, and then I don't know. Part of me is glad I didn't watch this when I was a kid, because I don't know that I would have known what to make of it.
You would have feared masturbation for life, is what you would have been. Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought, what? It could just shoot all over the place?
All over the fucking place, yeah. Yeah, it's funny because he does a pretty good job of hiding the left ear until the big reveal. Mm-hmm. But there are a couple shots where he whips his head around too much, where it's like, oh, if only they had done a little digital work. Just snuck a little blur of it in there.
Yeah.
But I do like the reaction, because I've had this moment. Now, I'm not necessarily going to say with this particular thing, but have you ever blown your nose and you can't find the snot? Right? Same sort of situation, and you start panicking because you're like, okay, it's not in my beard, it's not on my shirt, it's not... You know, you're like, I'm about to go in somewhere and there's a rogue snot out there somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a nightmare. Just, but his reaction of the magical cum that just like vaporized into a mist and disappeared into oblivion.
Like, yeah, I guess part of my problem with, I wish it would have been a little bit more like, I could rewind and see, oh, that's when it happened.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of didn't like that it's just, like, they clearly just want to get to the gig, but they didn't. Yeah. That was, like, the one thing that I felt like they didn't set it up well.
It's an impossible place, is what you're saying, yeah.
Like, or I thought...
I have just witnessed. And he's standing in front of a mirror.
Yeah.
Like, I thought... How does he not do the last-minute check of his hair and then go, oh, shit! Exactly there it is.
Like, I thought it would have been funny if, like, say he finishes up, it's on his hand, the doorbell rings, he's, like, startled, and he, like, rubs his ear, and then he's, like, oh, trying to figure it out because he got to get to the door, and then he's, like, wiping his hand but doesn't realize it's gone already, and then gets there.
Yeah, or somehow he's shot it out into the room, and it's, like, dripping from the ceiling in the middle of the scene.
But the other thing...
That's too much.
Yeah. The other thing is I'm assuming they had to go down an elevator to get to wherever they're going. And I know no woman on this planet that would be able to walk that distance
with
reflective surfaces everywhere without seeing and checking to make sure that everything was looking good.
Sorry, I beat you to the end of that sentence. Yes, absolutely. 100% agree with that. Yeah. Yeah, she would have spotted that. Now, I mean, imagine being the prop guy that works on this movie. Because it's like, okay, you need to build what looks like a realistic scrotum sticking through a zipper. And you need to build some sort of realistic cum drop. And, like, you come into work that day and it's like, oh, how am I going to do this? How am I going to make this prosthetic ejaculate to make it look as real? I mean, like, it's just like the job of Hollywood, man. Like, these, I can't even imagine this life of some of the things that had to be built.
Yeah, that dinner table conversation of, what'd you do at work today, honey? Well,
that's right.
I had to test, like, 50 different types of hair gel and you know, glues and whatnot.
Various mixtures, yeah.
I'm really trying to, like, come up with something that has the look and viscosity of semen without it actually being semen.
And then, like, you just imagine the Farrelly brothers, like, just walking past this just table of, you know, man goo drips, you know, and just being like, oh, no, wait, that's the one. That's the one. Oh, what a day on set. But yes, we do get the famous is that hair gel moment. And yes, her bangs are like in 1989. My God, I've got my high school yearbook looks like that in 1989. That's what the bangs on the girls looked like back then. Like, that was actually a legitimate thing at one point. Not in 1998, but I remember one time when that was the fashion. Big high bangs.
Yeah, bangs are not really something you see as much anymore. They've kind of gone away.
Yeah, yeah. So Mary, I mean, is there some sort of, like, magical allure of Ted? Like, has she been pining for Ted all these years, too? Like, you gotta wonder deep down whether there's any of that. Because, yeah, Healy starts getting really weird with her all of a sudden the day that she bumps into Ted. But she jumps into Ted's arms pretty quickly. Now, I mean, I guess I'm a serial monogamist. Like, I don't usually do a lot of dating around in my life. So I guess I just have trouble accepting the fact that she's intimate with one person and then, oh no, I'm going to check out Ted. I guess maybe that's why I'm struggling with this, but she does turn her back on poor old Healy pretty quickly.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Because she was ready to, like, ditch him before she even found out about the murder and all that. I did kind of appreciate, like, Ted's boldness when he comes back and is like, you know, basically just like, why don't you just ditch whoever you're going to
be? Yeah, well, you could blow off that jerk and, and come up with, like, me instead.
That's awesome, but...
Yeah.
The sense I got is Mary must have still had some... Yeah, she must have had some residual feelings for Ted. Yeah. Still, or at least, like, remembered him fondly.
So now, do we not find out that Ted is a writer until they're actually on their date? Which is, like, 3/4 of the way into the movie?
No, I feel like it's mentioned in his psychiatrist at the beginning.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. Or maybe even with Dom.
Yeah, and like one of those conversations.
Okay. Because, yeah, I got to that point and I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, that's what he does. Because my thought was that she likes the guy that can work wherever he needs to. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, how would it work? Oh, right, he's a writer, so... I had forgotten up until that point.
When Dom,
yeah, she likes him.
Yeah, when Dom finally reveals, like, well, first off, whoever is doing the makeup on the hives, I really love that.
Throughout the whole movie, the eye one.
But
oh.
Yeah, when he shows up at Mary's apartment with that eye, like, little pustule or whatever, that the white head. Oh my God, it was so gross. Want to barf, but I can't stop looking at it.
And there's this part of you that wants to pop it. Yeah. You just want to pop it. Yeah, so his love blisters. Yeah,
I thought for sure it was going to end up before like the reveal of who he actually is. I thought the hive thing was going to end up being like some sort of like herpes or like ST. I thought it was going to end up being that his wife, who he's, like, kind of domineering towards, was, like, secretly fucking with him somehow and, like, I don't know, not poisoning him, but, like, doing something to make him have, like, I don't know, maybe by giving him blowjobs or whatnot. Like,
yeah, she
him
wants to stop
reaction.
Blowing him during COPS. I mean, why would you choose COPS as your background noise while you're getting blown? That's not something that's going to keep you in the mood. God,
I don't know, high adrenaline.
And is live COPS actually a thing? I never thought that it was actually live. I never watched COPS faithfully, but like, is it live? Are some of them live?
I mean, it wouldn't shock me if like every now and then they had like a special live broadcast. But when I watched it, it wasn't live.
Huh. I guess sometimes a sitcom does that too, right?
Yeah.
Chris Elliott was another one of those that in this movie, my God, like the fact that I was watching this movie now a little more critically and I saw the perspective of, okay, I know he's Woogie. You know, it was interesting seeing the hives develop, which, you know, like, and all the lines he uses to play it off is just, no, I'm just stressed, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh no. But no, the closer he gets to Mary, the more he breaks out, and it's nice. I like it. Poor Ted, though, he takes even more abuse. I mean, again, Jason Biggs, that's what he does. He just keeps taking more and more abuse because he gets the fish hook in the face and the dog chewing on his nuts and stuff like that. Oh, the bit...
The fish hook was bad.
That one looks painful, yeah. And your mind starts wandering about how is it going to back out of there?
Yeah, how's like,
get it out?
How is he not maimed was my question. Yeah, like,
he has no marks in the next scene. Yeah, he shows up with the baseball. He shows up with the Tony Coniglieri baseball autograph for Warren. Now, this might be the smartest joke in the movie. He got Warren this particular baseball because Tony Coniglieri played for the Boston Red Sox in the 60s. And he was seriously injured when he got hit in the face with a fastball, which okay. mirrors what happened to Warren in the scene previous.
Ah.
Right? So, like, out of all the players he could have chosen to get an autograph, he chooses the one that famously got hit in the face with a baseball. And it's like, okay, that's clever. That's mm-hmm. clever. Now that I know that, that's clever. I would have never known that name was even a real name, but it's so specific. Tony Coniglieri.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an MLB guy, no, so I mean, I kind of just like, I was like, oh, sure.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I've heard of A-Rod.
Jose Canseco?
And Babe Ruth.
Yeah, Babe Ruth.
Lou Gehrig, he's got a disease named after him, right?
I know all the steroid guys like Mark McGuire, Barry
that's right.
Bonds.
That's right. Yeah, Jose Canseco.
that's my era of baseball.
I like the detail that when everyone does end up together in the one room, that Magda comes out of her bedroom. You know, the one guy's putting on his shirt, and she comes out eating a banana split.
Yeah.
Banana split. And, you know, unfortunately, Mary was right. Mary was saying that Magda would be eating a banana split before her. She was right. We find out, though, that no matter what, like, you do and which approach you take to try to get Mary to choose you, you know, like, you can even take the approach of bringing back her favorite old boyfriend. The key to Mary's heart is her brother. Getting good with Warren, you getting good with Mary.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Like that, and that's kind of like how it was from the very beginning of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why she always holds Ted high in her heart.
I mean, you know, you think of like the scam that Healy had where he overheard Magda saying, oh, no, no, Puffy knows. So if Puffy thinks he's cool, right? And, you know, when Ted meets Puffy for the first time, I mean, Puffy goes absolutely crazy. Now, granted, he is all methed up at that point. So, you know, Puffy attacking him, that's fine. But given that Magda has this hard, fast rule for Mary about whether someone would like her over how well they get along with her dog, Ted's off to a bad start.
Yeah, that's true. Like... Well, but the dog doesn't really like anybody.
Yeah.
Like, it only likes Pat because he drugged it. He sedated
it. Oh, yes.
It.
Yeah. Almost killed it. Yeah. Performing mouth-to-mouth on a dog. I mean, what do you think when you read the script and look at that, if you're Matt Dillon? Okay, so today I'm going to be giving mouth-to-mouth with a dog, and...
well, I mean, I don't know. That whole scene, I'm gonna be trying to, what is the word? Oh, defibrillate
oh, yeah.
the dog with the extension cord and
yeah.
have it catch on fire.
Oh, yeah, they abused that dog. I guess that's why they had so many of the fake dogs. Like, you have to have one that you can inflate. You have to have one that... Again, the prop guy is like, okay, so I had to lay out all these different dogs. This this one had a hot water bottle inside that I could inflate. This one had to catch on fire. Fuck. And then you got the Farrellys just walking with their hands behind their back going, that one, that's the one. That one looks most like Puffy.
I was just thinking, they don't really ever fully explain what Norm's plan was. Like, Norm, to me,
he's playing the long game.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like he ever actually intended to date Mary. He just wanted to, like, keep her single and be close to her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, how do you, he actually, like, legitimately created a whole new person. Like, that's a deck of cards just waiting to fall. Or house
that
of cards.
One's a hard, well, I mean, so did Healy. I mean, Healy had his house in Tibet and,
right,
you know,
yeah.
He was going to leave his architect, like, he at least had his out where I could leave my architecture stuff behind. But yeah, I mean, he's always forgetting his wallet. That's not sustainable. He can't go on playing rich architect for very long.
Yeah, I guess I just kind of got the sense with Healy that his goal was more to, like he knew that it was eventually going to fail. He just wanted to sleep with her. That's kind of what I get from him.
Okay. Yeah. But I think the magic of Mary is you want to fall in love with her. You know, like if we're dealing with a case of fuck, Mary, kill, she's always on the Mary list. Mary on the Mary list. Because she is Mary. Oh, boy.
I also didn't think it made sense why when she gets the letter and Ted, like, that seems to me like it was a little bit overblown. Like, it's easily, like, he didn't hire Healy out of any sort of maliciousness. He just was curious, like, to know where she was and what she was. Like, this is pre-internet. Like,
true, yeah. I mean, there's no Facebook going on at that time. But I think it's because of how he had his meet-cute with her. You know, like, he talked like he was just there out of happenstance and everything like that.
Gotcha. Like, if he would have fessed up right away, it would have been...
Yeah. And then when you add in the fact that she has also had a history with a stalker, then it's like, okay, no, this is not cool because, yeah, you came in, you were lying about yourself. I've got all these other people that are lying on. Yeah, I think there's a lot of pieces to that distrust, I think.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I buy the reaction is all I'm saying. But yeah, Ted decides to bring back her old boyfriend, who happens to be Brett Favre, and because she thinks that she would be happiest with him. And then he says goodbye to Warren, but he can touch Warren's ears without Warren tackling him and beating him up like he usually does. He's just cool with it, and that's the secret to... That's the key to her chastity belt that she wears. That's how you get inside Mary's pants, is getting good with the brother. But yeah, but Mary tells Ted that she would be happiest with him because she's a Niners fan. It's the first thing she ever told him. Brett Favre filmed these scenes just after he had been in a Super Bowl against the 49ers. You know, it's as topical as you can get. That's... I remember when there was a Simpsons that aired that it was a Super Bowl Simpsons back when Fox had the rights, and they did this gimmick where they did a live Simpsons basically.
Okay.
There were a couple moments where they put in like the actual results of the game that had just happened, where they had animated it and like the voices did it live after the show in those couple moments. It was kind of nice. I remember that being a big gimmick.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, the Simpsons. But so we shoot the guitar player because, yeah, the old man just wanted Mary. He's actually trying to kill Ted. And the end, except for the Build Me Up Buttercup credits scenes with everybody singing and dancing to Build Me Up Buttercup. Looks like they had fun on this movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed the credit dance and all that stuff. I feel like, I'll say this, a testament to this movie is the fact that I'd never seen it before, and it was like, when I finished watching it, I was like, I don't need to rewatch this. Like, it kept me hooked the entire way through.
Yeah, yeah.
Right and on. It just was a lot of fun, and I don't know, it's like a really, yeah, it's a really fun movie.
Well, there we go. There's Something About Mary. Now, Colin, on IMDb, it scored 7.1 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 69. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 84% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 61. Wow, the critics way higher than the audience on that one. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like a Warren tackling you because you touched his ears, hit us with some reviews.
All right. So, I don't know if anybody knows what... Well, people surely do. Have you ever heard of Common Sense Media?
Common Sense Media, no.
I'm pretty sure it's like a Christian, like, movie review site, but it basically, like, reviews things. Like, it's like to make... It's basically, like, where you go if you want to know... Like, if a movie is suitable for children or not.
Oh, okay, okay.
This type of site.
Yeah, yeah.
So, this first review comes from no name, but it says, Kid, 10 years old, 1 out of 5 stars. The headline is, Watch Something Better. Inappropriate, scary, swears, horrible movie. This was recommended because I like Dumb and Dumber, but this is much more inappropriate and just not good. I also got recommended Kingpin, which I like, but I was scared of Landlady for about 2 weeks, and it was probably too inappropriate for me, but not as inappropriate as this. Hate this and don't watch.
Okay.
It's interesting because you can choose between kid reviews and parent reviews.
Okay. It blows my mind that there are kids that are 10 years old watching There's Something About Mary.
This unnamed Rotten Tomatoes reviewer gave it 4 out of 5 stars and says, While I'm not a fan of comedies, I am a fan of this movie. I caught myself laughing out loud numerous times during this romp in funny land. Well written and directed with tongue-in-cheek performances all around. One of the best movies I've seen lately.
Romp in funny land.
Mm-hmm.
Right on.
Harry H. says 4.5 out of 5 stars and... I don't know what they were on, but I just wanted to include this one because I thought it was funny. Sandler and Diaz play this madcap comedy pretty straight, but it's the supporting cast that makes this movie hysterical and memorable. Kudos to Dylan and Puffy.
You know, I feel like young Ben Stiller could actually be mistaken for Adam Sandler in a weird way. That's not that far off. I mean, I don't know. I could see how you could make the mistake. But you're definitely wrong. You're definitely on something, like you said, yeah.
LJ says, I bought this movie because it had good ratings and one of my friends recommended it. However, it stayed in my cabinet for 6 months. I decided to watch this today and I was mind blown.
I like the adventure that guy took me on right there. I mean, there was a whole story behind this sad DVD that was purchased for this man and just sat there lonely for 6 months until it blowned his mind.
Blowned his mind. Vahanga J. Awikarama gave the movie 1 out of 5 stars and says, so cringy. Never have I ever seen a movie that manages to offend so many people within 2 hours. This is offensive to women, the LGBTQ plus community, people with mental health issues, and oh, it also glorifies animal abuse. The storyline of the movie has a good base. This could have been a great movie if it focused on the main story without trying too hard to make people laugh with cringy, offensive humor.
Okay, pump the brakes, Karen. Like, I mean, I get it. It's not for everyone, but come on. How is it not LGBTQ friendly? Is it because she said that I'm a lesbian or I'm bisexual? I'm just fucking with you, Ted. Or I get. Oh, I guess the rest stop, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, 1998. I mean,
yeah, come on.
What, wasn't that when it when wasn't that really happening in 1998?
Emma G says, "When I reached the end of this movie, I knew I'd never forget it. It's so well done and hilarious. So many callbacks to things said earlier in the movie and gigs that weren't even sensible and were just to be funny for no reason. Probably my favorite comedy of all time." There we go.
Right on. Yeah, so 7.1 and 61 from audiences, 69 and 85 from critics. I still love this movie. I was impressed with, I thought it held up. I guess, yes, looking at what that one person where, you know, I say pump the brakes. I mean, you know, they bring up a couple points. I guess some of it doesn't necessarily hold up to today's standards of how we have to be inclusive for everyone. But it's, I think those few little hiccups aside, I think it still holds up really well. I think it's a well-made movie. It's a well-made mystery movie. And I think it's still hilarious as shit. I still very much like There's Something About Mary, and I'm glad to have rewatched it. Colin, your first viewing, I was sitting there watching this going, man, I hope Colin likes this because I still find this funny as shit. So what did you think of There's Something About Mary?
I thought it was great. I mean, it's like, I don't know. Maybe this will make me sound old, but it was just like a classic. This type of comedy is like my comfort level of comedy.
And
I don't know. I enjoyed, you know, sometimes even movies that I used to like on this podcast, I watch them and I'm like, I just have to get through it. I just need to get through this for the show. But this movie, I legitimately enjoyed.
Yeah.
And I was just surprised, like, that even, I don't know, how old is it? 1998, what is it?
25 years, fuck.
25 years, that like, it wasn't, somehow this movie hadn't been spoiled for me.
Yeah.
Like, I was still surprised by all the twists and turns. I didn't see them coming. I didn't know that they were going to happen.
You came in knowing hair gel. That was...
Yeah. And so I feel like I... Unlike some other movies where I felt like through pop culture I've known what they were about and I've known what the big set pieces and the twists were, with this one it was refreshing to be like, oh, like I got to have like a fresh virgin watch, so to speak.
Yeah, you got to watch these people that are all old and gray now and be like, oh man, it's like it was lost in the vault for you. It's kind of... This time capsule opened up and you got to see these people at their youngest and hottest. And okay, I'm glad you liked it, because this was one where it was like, well, you've got to see There's Something About Mary. I couldn't believe that you hadn't seen it yet. And so, yeah, like I said, I was watching the whole thing going, ah, this is still so great. I hope Colin likes it. What's your Ben Stiller like knowledge? Like, I know you've seen Walter Mitty, and like,
I haven't seen the Ben Stiller show.
Okay.
But I mean, like, I love Ben Stiller, and like, I think Heavyweights is my favorite Ben Stiller movie of all time. Like, that character, I can't remember, Tony something or whatever.
I've never seen Heavyweights.
Like, he's the best. But I mean, I love Heavyweights. I love, like, I don't like the second Zoolander, is absolute trash, but I love the first Zoolander. I really like this movie he did called The Heartbreak Kid. I like one he did with Jennifer Aniston, Along Came Polly. I really love that
Along
one.
Along Came Polly. Yeah, the duplex was the Drew Barrymore the duplex, I think. What was your entry point for... Since this was kind of like the thing that made him blow up, what was your entry point, though, for Ben Stiller?
Let me see. I want to say it was Zoolander, but let me check.
Unless it was Happy Gilmore. But I don't even consider that a Ben Stiller
movie. Yeah, I was going to say it. Like, I don't even know that I realized it was him until after the fact.
Yeah, no, neither did I. Neither did I.
Oh, yeah, Tropic Thunder is so good. Dodgeball. Ooh, Starsky and Hutch. Love that one.
Oh, my God. We got to just do 3 months of Ben Stiller movies. There's so many on that list.
Greenberg. I liked him in that movie, too. If I'm looking at his, it has to be Zoolander was the first. That would have been my first. Zoolander Heavyweights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, there we go. That is There's Something About Mary, and that's our show for the week. Oh, boy. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is, well, just subscribe to our show and download our show and share our posts and tell your friends, because word of mouth is so important to people that are trying to build a podcast audience. You know, if you tell someone, well, it means so much more than even reviews will. But why not write a review? Thank you to everyone that has already written a review. But boy, oh boy, reviews are just one of those things that if someone sees a review because they're looking for a show, they'll look at it and go, hey, this person likes it. Look at all these people that like it. So if you haven't written a review, go give us 5 stars and a review on whatever app you listen to your podcast on. Or if you want to be a financial supporter of the show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, become part of our Patreon family, and you become an executive producer, so you get a shout out just like executive producer Joshua Blum from the 13th Hour Podcast.
And check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you used to like. Let us know if you want to be on the show to talk about those movies you used to like.
Oh, hey, I used to like this one. That was, I mixed shit up, you mixed it up. Oh my God, I was thrown off. I used to like this one is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. If you want to hear more from me and my stories of being a bus driver, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. Thank you for listening, and join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.